Okay. So the goal of today's shiur is to get an overview for Shemitah. First of all, on the level of Hashkafa, what's the idea of Shemitah, to the extent that we can understand what the Torah wants from us, what the purpose of this whole mitzvah is, the way the Torah describes it. And if we have time, I'll also begin to give a very general overview and how we decided that the Tashrei Samach Chet, in fact, is the next Shemitah year, how we came to the counting that we use. And if we have time, I'll begin even to give you the halakhic overview. If we run out of time, we'll leave that for next time, when in any case, Bezrat Hashem, we'll start going into more detail. There's two main places where Shemitah Karka. There's two Shemitahs, right? There's the Shemitah of the Karka, the Shemitah of the land, and there's also Shemitah Ksafim, that we'll talk about very briefly, but we won't go into. Shemitah Karka, the mitzvah to refrain from working the land. There's two main places where the Torah teaches us this mitzvah, and that's in the first two verses that you read here. The context of those two passages is very different, isn't it? Did you pick anything up about that, about what's the idea? You know what, let's read them. I'll read a few psukim. And I want you to tell me, in each one, if you read only that parsha, without knowing the other parsha, and without knowing anything else about Shemitah, how the whole mitzvah appears and what it seems to be trying to do. Let's take a look at the first one. The first one's in Shmot Perek Chaf Gimel. This is Parshat Mishpatim. In general, what's the primary theme of Parshat Mishpatim? What? As its name implies. Mishpatim, we know what's that? What is Mishpat? Laws? What specifically, what kind of laws? Civil laws, okay. What does Mishpat mean? Justice, actually, right? Okay, laws, all of Parshat Mishpatim is about civil law, as Debbie said, particularly laws that have to do with various forms of financial interactions between people, economic transactions, damages, and stuff like that, things that one person might sue another person for, basically creating a society that is just, in which people's business interactions with one another are regulated and are fair. This is already towards the end of the parsha. And the little parsha that I photocopied for you there begins very much on this theme, right? Lo tateh mishpat evyon chad rivo midvar sheker. Oh, I got cut off a little bit, I'm sorry. Midvar sheker tirchak v'naki v'tzadik al taharog ki lo atzik rasha v'shochat lo tikach. We have here a series of psukim that give us various laws at a very rapid pace, which are very much in the theme that I mentioned a moment ago, which the Torah has been going on for several prakim already by the time we get to these psukim. Right? Not allowed to oppress poor people, not allowed to lie, not allowed to pervert justice, courts shouldn't execute innocent people, judges are not allowed to take bribes, that's a terrible thing because it perverts the whole concept of justice, and you have to be particularly sensitive to the needs of a ger, of a stranger. After all, you were strangers in the tribe, you know what it feels like, so don't take advantage of somebody who's a stranger in your land. And then in the middle of all that, we read the following. V'sheish shanim tizra et arzecha ve'atzafta et tivuata. For 6 years, you can plant your fields and you can gather your crops as usual. V'hashvi'it tishmetena unitashta. Those are two hard words. V'hashvi'it, the seventh year, tishmetena. Let's start with that one. Anyone know what the shortest that word means? Shin Mem Tet, Tishmetena. Anyone know what that word means in Hebrew? Oh, you could have looked it up. There's a dictionary right there. You want to look? She's prepared. Is that yours? Oh, it's on shelf. Okay, good. Oh, yeah. Shin Mem Tet, just to show it. What does it mean? Okay, to drop, to let it fall, perhaps release. Okay? So v'hashmini tishmitena, I guess we can translate it, you shall release it, u'nitashta. What does that word mean? Ki lo yitosh Hashem amo. Abandon it. Okay? Lo yitosh Hashem amo. But when it comes to Shemitah, you're supposed to abandon it. Sheikh Shanim tizra et arsecha, v'yataftta et tivuata. For 6 years, you can work your land in a normal fashion. You plant the crops, and then you harvest the crops, and you gather the produce. That goes on for 6 years. V'hashvi'it, but in the 7th year, tishmitena unitashta. You must release it, you must abandon it. What's it? What's it referring to? The land, arsecha, right? The same land that for 6 years you planted and worked. In the 7th year, you must release it and abandon it. And what happens to it? V'achlu ebyonei amecha. Instead, who comes in there? The poor people. You release your field. You abandon your field. And it's available. So the poor people come in and they eat. V'yitram tochal chayat hasadeh. V'yitram. And that which is, if there's anything left when the poor people finish, so who gets it? Well, the animals get it. It's not, it's just abandoned. Kein tasel lechaimecha ulezeitecha. And similarly, for a kerem, for a vineyard, and also for an olive grove. Yes? It seems to mean that. We'll see the halachic meaning of these sukkim when we get a little bit more into it in future shiurim. But what we're going to learn is that one of the things which is derived from this halachically is that all fruits and vegetables and crops are hefker. They're available for anyone who can come and take them. And that's true halakha l'masa. People that observe Shemitah do that. If you walk around, even not only in agricultural areas, but even, I remember from 7 years ago, or even on right around here, there are a few houses around the corner that have little gardens with fruit trees. So a tree or two outside someone's house, and people who follow the laws of Shemitah, they usually put up signs, you know, announcing that everybody's allowed to come into the garden, the gate is unlocked, or you can come and get a key, and everyone's allowed to take the fruits. We'll learn the details of how this has to be done. But for now, let's focus on the idea, okay? So again, we're in the middle of a context of a parshiyah here that's telling us not to oppress people, not to pervert justice, not to take bribes, and to be sensitive to the needs of gerim. And then we're told, Sheshanim Tizrat Ersecha Deasafet Tzuata, V'yashvinit, and then in the 7th year, Tishmetena Unitashta, V'achlu Evyonei Amecha, V'yitram Tochal Chayata, V'zeh Kein Tasev L'chaim L'cha L'zeitecha, Sheshanim Tasev Masecha, now we're talking about something else already. Sheshanim Tasev Masecha, V'yom HaShvinit Tishdod, this is not talking about Shemitah, but rather about the weekly Shabbat, L'man Yanuach Shorcha V'chamorecha, V'inafesh ben amatcha v'hageh. In the context of these psukim, what seems to be the purpose and the idea of Shemitah? What's the reason for this mitzvah, the way the Torah seems to be presenting it to us here, both in terms of the things that are emphasized in these psukim and the context in which they are presented? Why? It's for the poor people. What? Right? It seems to be one of the ways in which the Torah obligates us to look out for the weaker elements in society. Look, we were just told, Zeger Tot Lo Tilchat, we were just told that Lo Tishkate Mishpat Evyoncha, we were told V'Nakiv Tzadik Al Taharov, we've got to be sensitive to the needs of the weak, of the defenseless. There are poor people. Some people are wealthy and own land and have fields and vineyards and orchards. And other people, those wealthy people, they certainly have plenty to eat themselves. And not only that, but they probably have extra that they sell. And that's how they got so wealthy. And or because they're wealthy, they bought the land. And now they have it. Whatever the story is, they're taken care of. But there are people out there that don't have land for whatever reason or who aren't successful. And once every 7 years, the Torah commands us, walk away from it all, open up the gate, and everyone is allowed to come in. And although the next pasuk refers to Shabbat, but it also puts it in the same context, L'man yanuach shorcha b'chamorecha b'nafesh ben abetzcha b'yagir. By the way, even the animals seem to be included in this. There seems to be even an idea that the animals have to have what they eat. The chayat ha-sadeh, shorcha b'chamorecha. There seems to be this emphasis on making sure that those who are less fortunate, those who don't have their own land, and even the animals, are provided for.
Isn't that a strange
thing? Isn't it strange to provide them as well? It's not the only time to provide for them. In the other years, we have other mitzvot. We have lekev, we have shikta, we have peah, we have maaser ani. Every third year, we have the general mitzvah of tzedakah. But you're right that there seems to be a periodic, like it seems to be that when the Shemitah year rolls around, we're giving them more than we give them the rest of the time. Right? We have to figure out why that is. But for whatever reason, it seems very much, correct me if you disagree with me, in these psukim, it seems that Shemitah is being presented very much as a social sort of a thing, what you might call a mitzvah ben adam l'chaveiro, particularly geared towards the poor and weaker elements of society. Correct? Yes? Okay. Now let's turn to Parshat Bahar, to the second major place in Vayikra. Again, let's forget for a moment what we read in Shmos. Let's pretend we're looking at this from scratch, and let's read these psukim and see what we get. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Bahar Sinai Lemur. Daber b'nei Yisrael v'matar lehem. Ki tavou el ha'aretz asher ani noten lachem. V'shavta ha'aretz Shabbat Lashem. By the way, we see something. Who is it for? Shabbat Lashem. Sheish shanim tizra sadecha. Sheish shanim tizmor karmecha. You know what that word means? Tizmor? Prune. Prune your vineyards. We'll talk a lot about zmira and what it means agriculturally and what the significance of it is halakhically. Sheish shanim tizra sadecha. Sheish shanim tizmor karmecha. Very similar to the pasuk we read earlier with the addition of the kerem, but the idea of planting and gathering. Uvashana shvi'it Shabbat Shabbaton Yihye La'aret. Who's it for now? It's for the land. It's for Hashem, it's for the land. It's not for the poor people, according to the Sukkim. Shabbat Shabbaton Yihye La'aret Shabbat Lashem. So it's for the land and for Hashem. Sadcha lo tizra, v'chamecha lo tizmo. For 6 years you plant and you prune, plant the fields and prune the vineyards. The seventh year, sadcha lo tizra, v'chamecha lo tizmo. Et tziach kitzircha lo tiktzor, that in vain is nivecha lo tiktzor, shnat shabbaton yela aret. Lo tiktzor, you cannot reap or harvest. The sfiach kitzircha, we'll talk about that word sfiach also when we get a little bit more into it. I guess sfiach means something that grows by itself. Because after all, there's a prohibition here to harvest crops. What crops are there? I didn't plant. Right? So the Torah here is referring to, even when you don't plant a field, there are things that may grow. If you have a field that you farmed for the last 6 years, and particularly last year during the harvest, let's say it's a grain field, let's say you're growing wheat. So during the harvest, inevitably, there are seeds that fall down from the plants, and if you don't work it, something's likely to grow, a lesser quantity perhaps. So that, lo tiktzor, not a lot of harvest, that in vain is yirecha lo tiktzor, tiktzirah is the term used for harvesting grapes. Shnat shabbaton yiyel aretz. Vayta shabbat aretz lachem le'achla. Not to talk about what that means. If you don't want to harvest the crops, so how are you going to eat it? That's one of the problems in these psukim that's going to have major halakhic ramifications. On the one hand, it tells us not to harvest, not to do ketzirah and ketzirah. It also tells us, "Vayta shabbat haaretz lachem le'achla." You're supposed to be able to eat it. So that's a bit of a tension that will work out. But for now, I'm interested in the rayoni aspect of it. Let's just read it here. "Vayta shabbat haaretz lachem le'achla v'chal v'la'abdecha v'la'matecha v'l'tzchircha v'toshavcha garim imat v'emtecha v'l'chaya sheba'atecha tiyeh kol tzvuata le'echo." And then the Torah goes on here and discusses the mitzvah of Yovel, which I'll discuss with you in a few minutes. I won't go into it in detail now, but just to note that with Yovel there's another concept which is introduced here. וספרתי לך שבע שבתות שנים, שבע שנים, שבע פעמים. היו לך ימי שבע שבתות השנים, תשע וארבעים שנה. So we have here seven, and then seven times seven. Counting seven times seven, that's by the way reminiscent of another mitzvah in the Torah, right? Seems to be parallel in some ways to Sefirat HaOmer. The same idea with Sefarta, seven times seven. And then, והעברתה שופר תשועה בחודש השביעי בעשור לחודש ביום הכיפורים תעבירו שופר בכל עצמכם. In this 50th year, that's not unusual. Usually you have שופר on Rosh Hashanah. We don't have שופר on Yom Kippur. We have a minhag that at the end of Yom Kippur, after Yom Kippur is over, we blow one tkiah from the shofar. That's a minhag. And it's not on Yom Kippur. You're not allowed to blow a shofar. After Yom Kippur is over. But in the Yom Kippur of Yovel, that means the mitzvah tkiah shofar on Rosh Hashanah, on Yom Kippur as well. Only in Yovel. And the kiddushim at shnat ha-chamishim shana. The rest of this we'll discuss in a few minutes. But the kiddushim, Yovel, which is part of the whole ma'arechet shemitah, is associated first of all with Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur all of a sudden popped up here as an important day, and kiddusha. If you read these sukkim here, in this context, the emphasis seems very different, doesn't it? What is the emphasis here? Who's it for? What? It's a day mitzvah al makom. Shabbat Lashem, Shabbat Haaretz Lashem, Kiddusha. It does mention here, what makes you say that? It does mention, correct, La'abdecha v'lamatecha v'l'schircha l'toshavcha agarimach, and even mentions the animals. But what it doesn't emphasize here is the idea that the poor people are going to be taken care of. It says everybody should participate. You and your servant and the animals. But it certainly doesn't seem to be the main point here. Everybody participate in the Shabbat Lashem. Here it very much seems to be a mitzvah ben adam la makom. The concept of Kiddushah is emphasized here. The introduction of Yom HaKippurim is somehow related to this whole system. And also the parallels that are being drawn here. It's clear from this that it's parallel to Shabbat. Right? That the word Shabbat is used here repeatedly. It's not used in Shmot. It's the mitzvah of Shabbat is mentioned in Shmot. But the psukim that is chashmita in Shmos, the term is v'ashvi'it tishmitena u'nekashta. The word shmita is used. Here the word is v'shavta ha'aret shabbat l'ashem shabbat shabbaton yelar. And kedusha. Can. Oh. It could be right. Right. So they're mentioned here, but it doesn't matter. Right. Correct. So now Chai already said, it's clearly both, right? It's clear that there's no contradiction between these two ideas. But the Pesukim in Shmos emphasize one aspect of Shemitah, namely the Bein Adam L'Chaviro aspect, the social aspect, the concern for the poor, whereas the psukim in Vayikra make this look like a mitzvah ben adam l'makom, emphasize the concept of God, etc. Now the truth is that you have a similar phenomenon somewhere else. I gave you other psukim to look at, right? About what? About Shabbat, right? I don't know if you ever noticed this, and I'm not sure if you noticed it now, but I gave you. Anyone know where these two passages are? The first one is Shmot Perek Tov, and the second is Zvan Perek Hey. What's the context of these two passages? This is the Aseret HaDibrot, right? I'm sure you all know there's the Aseret HaDibrot appearing in the Torah in two places. It's here in Parsha Yitro, where the Torah is described kind of, you know, contemporaneously as the Torah is discussing the events of that year, the first year of Yitzhak Mitzrayim. The Torah is discussing Matan Torah, and in that context, the Torah presents to us the Aseret HaDibrot. And then in Sefer Dvarim that we're going to read only in a few weeks. That's Sefer Dvarim, that's Pasha Dvarim, another couple of weeks. We have Moshe Rabbeinu 39 years later. In the last year before going into Eretz Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu kind of reviews a lot of the events, and in that context there's a repetition of the Aseret HaDibrot. Moshe Rabbeinu recites them again and says, Et HaDvarim HaEla, these things you heard on Har Sinai. And yet there are a number of, even though Moshe Rabbeinu is supposedly describing for us, the events that he says to place on Har Sinai, nevertheless there are some differences, there are some distinctions between the way in which the Aseret HaDibros are presented to us in Shemot and the way they are in Dvar. And after this one of the commandments, the one about Shabbat, has some of the most important distinctions. The most well-known of them is actually not what I'm supposed to say on now, and that's that in Shemot it says, Zachor Etzim HaShabbat L'Kodesho, and in Dvarim it says, Shamor Etzim HaShabbat L'Kodesho. That has all sorts of meanings. It has halachic significance. The fact that women are obligated in Kiddush is learned from that, for example. It has philosophical significance. We make reference to it in the Chadozi, Shamor V'Zachor V'Dibur Echad Ishmiyano Kelam Mifad. But that's not what I'm talking about now. Everyone gets so focused on that, though, that we often miss some of the other subtle and less subtle differences. Let's look at the way it's said in Shemot and the way it's said in Zvar. In Shemot, the Torah tells us, Zachor et Yom HaShabbat L'Kodesho. Sheishet Yomim Tavol V'Asita Kom Lachtecha. V'Yom HaShvi'i Shabbat L'Hashem Elokecha. לא תעשה כל מלאכה, אתה ובנך וביתך, עבדך ויום הקרבנתך, וגרך אשר בשלך. So here as well, Shabbat, it mentions that it's for you, it's for your children, it's for your Eved, and for your animals, and for the gear. Why? כי ששת ימים עשה השם את השמיים ואת הארץ, את הים וכל השמיים, והיה לך ביום השביעי, על כן, ורק השם את יום השבת ואת אנשי. If we read Sefer Dvarim, which again purports to reports to us the very same event, we notice that Moshe Rabbeinu made certain changes, or that the Torah used the opportunity to present it one way in one place and one way in the other place. Now the differences here, because it's Sakha Kol repeating the same commandment twice, the differences are more subtle than what we saw regarding Shemitah, but there's a very clear difference in emphasis here as well. Here we have Shamor et Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho Kasher Tzivcha Hashem Elokecha. So far it sounds pretty much the same. And here all of a sudden is another phrase inserted. There it, in Shemot it just ends by giving a list of all the people that have to keep Shabbat. But here it says, L'ma'an yanuach avdecha v'yamatcha kamocha. In Shemot, it just says, Ata, Bimcha, Vitecha, Avdecha, Ve'amatcha. Avdecha, Ve'amatcha, Uve'amtecha. You, your son and daughter, your servants, and your animals. It doesn't tell us that there's any particular significance to that. But in Devarim, it's Ata, Ve'avdecha, Ve'amatcha, V'shorcha, Ve'chamecha, V'chol, Ve'amtecha, V'gercha, Asher, V'sharecha, L'ma'a, Yanuach, Avdecha v'amatcha kamocha. And also the reason for Shabbat changed. In Shemot it was why? Ki sheshet yamim asa Hashem et ha-shamayim v'et ha-aretz. But now, what's the reason? V'zacharta min dvarim na. V'zacharta ki eved hayita v'yaretz Mitzrayim v'yotziacha Hashem elokecha misham v'yad chazaka v'zrua netuya al kein zivcha Hashem elokecha lasot et yom ha-shabbat. First of all, what's the reason for Shabbat in Dvarim? It's got nothing to do with Dvarim, with Maaseh Bereishit, rather. With what? Yetziat Mitzrayim. Right? By the way, we make reference to this in our Kiddush on Friday night. Friday night, we emphasize this. Why do we keep Shabbat? What does it say in the Kiddush? Shemakachov yavav atzon yichilanu zikaron lemaaseh Bereishit, ki yom tchila l'mikra yikodesh, zecher yetziat Mitzrayim. Shabbat has this dual element to it. On the one hand, it recalls Maaseh Bereishit, on the other hand, it recalls Yetziat Mitzrayim. Both of them, but in Shemot, the Maaseh Bereishit aspect is emphasized. In Dvarim, it's the Yetziat Mitzrayim aspect that's emphasized, and Daf Keder tells us, V'zacharta ki eved hayita, Yetziat Mitzrayim, al kein tivcha, Hashem lokecha lasot et yom haShabbat. And going back to Pasuk, the reason for Shabbat is presented to us here as L'ma'an Yanuach Avdecha V'amatcha Kamocha. So Shabbat as well, which I think we often tend to think about fundamentally as a classic example of a mitzvah bein adam l'makom, Shabbat is between me and my God. It's a day that I take off from work to testify to the fact that God created the world, that God runs the world. It's a day that I spend in tefillah, in the mutarah, with my own family, involved in spiritual matters. And yet, although perhaps we don't always think of it this way, the Torah makes very clear that Shabbat has a very strong social component also. L'man yanuach abdicha b'mavcha kamocha. Maybe for 6 days I'm the Adon. I'm a wealthy man. I'm not, but let's pretend I was. I'm the Adon. I have all these servants. I sit back in my chair and they do the work. That works for 6 days. But on Shabbat it's different. V'zachar tekiyev and hayita b'yaretz Mitzrayim. Okay, Sivcha Hashem Elokecha lasot et yom haShabbat l'man yanuach abdicha b'mavcha kamocha. There's an equalizer here. Even your animals don't work for you on Shabbat. And when you look at Shabbat, you see that Shabbat has a spiritual ben adam l'makom component to it. Shabbat has a social ben adam l'chavero component to it as well. And it's not two independent things. One flows from the other. Because of the fact that I have to recognize that God created the world, that God runs the world, I have to follow His command. So therefore, I have to allow my eved to rest. I have to allow my animals to rest. By doing so, I recognize that I'm not the boss. That whatever I have, I only have to bless Him. And as a result of that, my whole attitude towards those who are weaker than I am is changed. Yeah? Could very well be, right. Yes, sir. Come on. Interesting, halakhically, Zachor is the mitzvah of Kiddush, and Shamor is the Yisra Melacha. And therefore, you're right. So Zachor, therefore, is a declarative sort of thing. Shamor puts him into action, and Trevor then to result in the action. And if the whole factory is closed, so the workers have a day off, and therefore, yes or no. So Shemitah, which is after all also Shabbat, right, seems to have a very similar idea. Now let's start from Vayikra and go back to Shemot. In Vayikra we have the Shabbat, Shabbat Hashem. Just like there's a Shabbat every 7 days, there's a different type of Shabbat every 7 years. And the same way, by the way, I meant to mention this before, Sfirat HaOmer is clearly parallel to Yovel. And even though Sfirat HaOmer isn't really connected to Shabbat, it starts on a different day of the week. How does the Torah describe it? L'sfartim lachem, l'achat haShabbat, right? And you may know that this was the source of a whole controversy. The Tzedukim argued that it should be from Shabbat, and the Prushim said, no, it's a different day. But the point is that we hold it's not from Shabbat. We count from the second day of Pesach. But the Torah calls it l'achat haShabbat. The Torah doctor links it with Shabbat, even in a way what it is. It isn't exactly, right? So the whole notion that there's 7 days, and then there's a Shabbat, and there's this concept of a set of seven sevens with a 50th, which is also referred to as a type of Shabbat. It's all paralleled here. That's in days and weeks. This is in years and Shemitah cycles, 50 decades, if you want to call it that. We have the same idea. And it's more than that as well, because at the end, we have the following. Let's just read a little bit about Yovel and see how Yovel fits in. On the one hand, Shabbat Hashem. I have to realize, the same way every 7 days I stop and I take a day off from work, every 7 years I take off a year from my working of the land, which after all, agricultural life runs in yearly cycles. I take off a year from my working the land, and again I recognize at the end is a pasuk. We'll read it more directly in a minute. All the way at the bottom, pasuk chav gimel. The haaretz lo timacher l'tzmitut. That mitzvah is connected to Yovel, but it's in the same parsha. Ki li haaretz, ki gerim mitoshavim atem imadi. Ki li haaretz, says Hashem. You think you're the landowner? You think you're the one who owns the land? Not true. Not true. I own the land. I give you permission to work on it 6 years. One year every 7 you stop. The same way every week you stop for a day and remember that you're not the boss and you're not the creator. for 177 years you do the same thing. And therefore, the same way that once you realize that Hashem created the world and runs the world and that makes you stop on Shabbat, that leads to l'man yanuach avdecha v'amatcha kamocha. So the same thing is true in Shemitah. It leads to v'ashvi'i tishmitenu nitashta v'yachlu et yolei amacha. Why are you any better than the poor person? You happen to own the land that he doesn't? That's not because you're any better. That's because you've been blessed by me, says God. Kiriyah. And because of that, you open the gates and let him in. It's not yours. It's not yours. It's my land. When I let you work it, you work it. When I don't let you work it, you walk away. It's not yours. And as a result of that, who has your name? So the Bein Adam Makom and the Bein Adam Chavero aspect are very, very close to it. I have a few sparring here that I will undoubtedly be referring to a lot during the Shemitah year, during the Shiurim. This one, Rav Yosef Tzvirimon, is my Rav in Alon Shrut, and put out a paper. He's in the middle of a new edition. This is from 7 years ago. On Laws of Shemitah, I will undoubtedly be referring to this sefer a lot. And he lists here in the Hakadamah, he brings down a number of other sources that show other aspects of Shemitah on the philosophical level, all of which contain hints in his psukim as well. First of all, there's the Sefer HaChinuch, which I also gave you the one. The Sefer HaChinuch lists three specific purposes for Shemitah. Did you get through it at all? What did he mention? First of all, we have... Anyone remember any of them? All right, I'll help. Yeah, but there's one even before the Shoshe Mitzvah. He tells us... Second, where is it? Maybe not. All right, let's start with the Shor Shei Mitzvah. What does he say? L'kvo b'libeinu tzayir tziur chazak v'machshafinu inyan chidush ha'olam k'sheish yedim asa Hashem et ha'shamayim v'et ha'aretz v'yom ha'shvi'i sh'lo bara d'var k'chtid menucha l'atzmo. So, first of all, the same way that keeping Shabbat and the idea of the 7 days reminds us of Sheish Yimei Bereishit and on the seventh day Hashem rested, so we have that idea here as well. We have Shemitah as a form of Shabbat. He also tells us, V'lachein tziva baruch hu, the next paragraph there, V'lachein tziva baruch hu lehafkir kol ma shetotzi ha'aretz b'shana zo milvan ha'shvita bo. Besides not working the land, the Torah could have told you to not work the land, and you could lock up your field and walk away. Right? But as nobody already noticed, it's not enough to do that. You also have to make the field hefker. Or the field is hefker. We'll see a halachic discussion about that, whether you have to do it or it happens by itself. But the point is, the field, you have to allow people to come in. Today she is gor ha'adam ki ha'aret shemotia ilav ha'perot v'chol shana v'shana lo b'kocha uskul atat uskiyotam ki yesh adon aleha ve'al adoneha. There's somebody above the land, there's somebody above the one who owns the land. וכשהוא חפה תומצווה עליו להפקירם. ועוד יש תועלת מזה, מידת נמצא בדבר, לקנות בזה מידת הוותרנות. כי אין נביא כנותן לבלי תקווה על הגמיה. And besides that, it also is good for us. It teaches us to be generous, it teaches us not to be selfish. It breaks our, right, the natural human nature is to want to preserve our property, want to keep, if I own something, I want to keep it tight, to become like a miser who hoards his money and his possessions. This goes against human nature, it breaks that spirit. Right, by forcing me to leave the gates wide open and let anyone come in, it teaches me to be unselfish, it teaches me to be generous. The also elet acher nimtza bazeh, she'osif ha'adam bitachon b'shem baruch hu. And also, another advantage is that it forces me, so to speak, to trust in Hashem. Right? And that you see very clearly in the Pesukim. If we go back to the Pesukim in Vayikra there, Pasuk Chaf, the Torah does something very unusual. Usually the Torah tells us to keep the law. Many laws of the Torah can be nisyonot. Keeping the Torah is difficult. And often, keeping the Torah can be a test that's very difficult for people to do. But the Torah rarely goes out of its way to give us chizuk to give us encouragement, right? Shmiyat Shabbat, right? Baruch Hashem, nowadays in places we live, it's usually not all that difficult to keep Shabbat. There were times in history that Jews had to, not so long ago, right? Those of you from the United States, if you were there 2 years, two generations or so ago, and my grandfather, Rosh Hashem, when he came over from Poland, if you weren't willing to work on Shabbat, you didn't have a job. You didn't have bread to put on your table. It was a huge, huge, huge nisayon. But the Torah doesn't really speak about it. You tell us, oh, it's important to keep Shabbat. There's all sorts of things in Chazal about it. The Torah itself just tells us this is what you have to do. God says keep Shabbat. Keep Shabbat. When it comes to Shemitah, the Torah itself goes out of the way to give us a Musar Shmuz and to give us Chizuk. Sorry for Pasuk Chaf here. The Chit Tomru, Ma Nochal Vashana Shiyit, Hein Lo Nizra, V'lo Nesof Et Tzvuatenu. That same person says, wait a second. This is very nice, this shir that I'm hearing here. Lovely ideas. Shabbat Hashem, Shabbat Haaretz, 7 years, recognize God created the world, that's really great. But, if I don't plant seeds, nothing's going to grow, or very little's going to grow. And whatever does grow, I'm not allowed to harvest it, I have to leave it open and let everyone else take it. What am I going to eat? Imagine telling somebody, take a year off from your job. Most people can't afford to do that. Someone who's extremely wealthy maybe can take a year off and just go and relax. Right? Or someone who's got some kind of fund, right? A sabbatical fund. Notice the term, by the way, teachers who get every 7 year off. It's not by accident that where that idea came from. Shnat Shabbaton, it's called in Hebrew. Right? It's based on Shemitah. Right? But for that, we put money away in a special fund. Right? If you have a job that allows you to do that, you're fair. But otherwise, right? If your parents, whatever they do for a living, if they're doctors, if they're accountants, whatever they do, right? If they call up their boss and say, listen, I'm taking a year off. The boss might even say, have a nice time. Even if the boss says you'll have a job when you come back, I'm not paying your salary for a year. So if you're a very wealthy person with all sorts of reserves, okay, great. If you're not, what happens if you take off a year from work? So pretty soon, at the end of the month, there's no paycheck coming in, not even yet. So the chi tomru, manu chava shanash v'id. Very logical question. The Torah says, "Tziviti et birchati lahem lachem b'shana shishit, v'asat et ha'tzvua l'shlosh ha'shanim, uzratim et ha'shana ha'shmiit, v'achalsim min ha'tzvua yashan ad ha'shana ha'tzvuit, ad bo tzvuata tochlu yashan." The Torah says, don't worry about it. I'll make sure, Hashem says, that enough growth, the Torah describes it as 3 years, but it really means 2 years. It means the end of the sixth year. The harvest usually lasts two when you harvest the crops. Harvest in Eretz Yisrael is in the springtime. It begins around Pesach time and continues through Shavuot, the spring and the summer. So the harvest normally gives you enough food for that year and for the next year until the next year's crops. So you harvest in the sixth year and you'll have what to eat for the remainder of the sixth year and the seventh year. But there's not going to be a harvest in the seventh year, so it'll last you for the entire seventh year. And then in the eighth year you'll plant. But until that grows, it'll continue until almost to the ninth year. Hashem says, I'll make sure you have enough stuff. In other words, basically what Hashem says, trust me. You're right. The Torah is almost saying, this mitzvah makes no sense. The Torah is almost saying that. If you come along and say, what? If I don't plant, I'm not going to have anything to eat. The Torah says, I'll see God, smoke halal. And therefore this teaches to be tachon Hashem. Rav Rimon quotes here also another interesting thing. The Ibn Ezra, and Rav Tzvir's scholarship picks up on this in his book and goes into it, he sees a different angle on it, that if you don't work for a year, you're not going to plant the field, and you're not going to harvest your crops. So in an agricultural society, which obviously once upon a time was, so you're not going to have all that much to do. You have a lot of free time. What are we supposed to do with our time? Go out and relax on the beach? It says Shabbat Lashem. Shabbat Lashem, presumably we're going to use our time on spiritual matters. It's a chance to spend time learning Torah. It's a chance to spend time. It's Shabbat. Just like once a week, we take a day off. We spend it with our family. We're able to spend more time in Tefillah, and in Zmirot, and in Limud Torah. Now we have a whole year to do that. And then there's Rav Kook. This is the passage that I tried to put on your sheet, but apparently it got cut off. I'll read the passage. This is from Rav Kook, who's a book. It actually came out after Rav Kook passed away. Rav Kook will be talking about this book a lot, because Rav Kook was one of those Rabbanim that were here, you know, just about 100 years ago or so, when the modern Zionist settlement began. It began already more than 100 years ago, but Rav Kook and the Chazon Ish and the other Gedolim of the time had to deal with the practicalities of how to observe Shemitah in the economic realities of modern times, and particularly the difficulties of those days, and there were differences of opinion between them in terms of how to do it, and we'll be discussing all of this a lot. So Rav Kook's writings on the subject were published after his death in a book called Shabbat Ha'aretz, and the introduction to that book, he discusses this following passage. Listen to this way of putting it. In a certain sense, it ties together everything we've said until now. Hayachid mitna'er michaye hachol liprakim krovim b'chol Shabbat. For an individual, there's a weekly cycle. And every week on Shabbat, the individual releases himself from the yoke of responsibility. All week long, a person's busy with his business, with his job, whatever it is, and is oftentimes almost completely consumed by the necessities of life. Once a week, he shakes off all of this and simply is able to take one day off and devote that day to Hashem. Et ota pi'ula shehashabbat po'elet al po yachid po'elet hi hashmita al ha'uma bichlala. Zorech miyuchad l'uma zo ki mizman mizman yitgale b'tocha ha'ma'or ha'eloki shala b'chol mulo zo haro asher lo yashbitu chaye ha'chevra shel po ha'za'ach v'ha'tachalut ha'shelah. Shemitah is Shabbat for the entire nation. Shemitah goes far beyond what Shabbat accomplishes. Shabbat works on the individual level. Shemitah works on the national level. It's not just you and I that stops working in Shemitah. The whole economy stops. The whole society stops. And for that reason, Shemitah is even a higher level than Shabbat. See, and Shabbat, it says, L'man yanuach avdecha v'yamatcha kamocha. If I'm the Adon and he's the Eved, so it's true. The rest of the week, I sit in my chair and give him orders, and he goes and does the work. One day a week, he sits in his chair like I sit in my chair. And you know what? Maybe he's even sitting at my table. But I'm still the Adon, he's still the Eved. V'ashvi'it tishmetena unitashta v'achlu ad yonei amecha. In Shvi'it, there's no Adon, there's no Eved. Ki li'ar. The gates are open. It's everything equalized. You ask, I have to take care of the Abadim of the poor people the rest of the time also. True. But the other 6 years, it's me giving to them. I let him in to take the leket, the shikcha, the peah. I give him tzedakah. I give him maaser ani. In Shemitah, I don't give him anything. He takes it. The achlu of yonei amecha. It's not mine. Everybody is equalized on a national level. It goes way beyond what happens to the individual each Shabbat. And so all these different ideas are not at all contradictory. They're all seeing different aspects of the same general principle. Here's another book that I'm going to be quoting, particularly in the later Shiurim, when we get to the Heter Mechira and the different other options that are suggested of how to practically implement Shemitah in today's economic realities. This book is also written by a neighbor of mine, Harav Zev Weitman Shlita, who is actually the Rav HaMachshir for Tnuva. If you buy like Tnuva, like cottage cheese or whatever, you look carefully, it says on his, like, the Hesher Harav Weitman Rav Tnuva. So he lives down the street from me. And he's very involved in Shemitah, both in his capacity in Tnuva, and he's involved with the Rabbanit HaRashit as well. And he has some very unique and interesting ideas about Shemitah, which I'll get to when we get to the right time. But in the introduction to this book, he said something very nice. There's a midrash that I that I gave you on a sheet here. Kol hashvi'in chavivim. All sevens are beloved, says the Midrash, by Yukra Rabba. And they list here all these different sevens. David HaMelech was the seventh son, and Moshe was the seventh generation from Abraham. But I want to focus on the last one's adventures here, and the part that I've wrapped it off there. Bishanim shvi'i chaviv shenemar behashvi'it shmitenu nitashta. Bishmitim shvi'i chaviv shenemar behidashtu mishnat ha-chamishim. Biyamim shvi'i chaviv shenemar ma'ivarech elokim et yom ha-shvi'i. And b'chodashim shvi'i chaviv shenemar b'chodash ha-shvi'i b'echad l'chodash. The Midrash connects the seventh day, the seventh year, the seventh month, the day of Shabbat, the year of Shemitah and its expansion in the system of Yovel, and the month of Tishrei, which of course is Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Kol HaShvi'in Chavivim. So Rav Weitman, in this little hakdama here to this book, he says, what is the idea of Shabbat? Shabbat testifies that there is a creator to the world. And that the creator not only created the world, but runs the world. That's really the difference between the Maaseh Bereishit aspect of Shabbat and the Yetziat Mitzrayim aspect of Shabbat. Yetziat Mitzrayim shows that God didn't just create the world as some believed and abandon it, but that God is intimately involved in the running of the world. He takes care of Am Yisrael, he brings down Mitzrayim, he changes the laws of nature with the Makot, etc. That's Shabbat. Shabbat testifies that there's a Borei Olam who creates the world and who runs it. Yanim Yorayim. Take that one step further. The Mishnah says, and we make reference to it in our Tfilot and Rosh Hashanah. Kol Borei Olam Ovrim Lifanav Kivnei Marot. The whole world passes before God, and God judges the world, and God determines everybody's fate. There's a Shofet Elyon who determines exactly what's going to happen. In fact, the line called by Elam by Elam Kibnei Maron, the Fanav Kibnei Maron, that's an omission in Rosh Hashanah, but it's known to us. Everybody here, Ashkenazi, we have any Sardin in the room? Okay. Oh, so you don't say this, but they see it in the Tana Tokev. That's the place where this is most known to the Ashkenazi in Rosh Hashanah. And there, the whole concept is, Rosh Hashanah Yikateivu, V'yom Tzom Kippur Yechateimun, Miyechia, Miyamut, Miyeyani, Miyeyasher. Everybody's fate is determined. Everybody's destiny is dictated by the Melech Olam. So, Shabbat is Chaviv B'yamim. That's when God creates creatorship. The fact that God created the world becomes known. Rulership. The Chodashim HaShvi'i Chaviv, and that's when God's Malchut becomes clear, and the fact that God controls everyone's destiny becomes clear. U'Bishanim Shvi'i Chaviv. The seventh year takes both of these ideas and brings them to a higher level. It's also Shabbat. And it's also a time in which God's rulership of the world is made very clear. And it takes place after Eretz Yisrael. And this is why he explains Shemitah doesn't apply in Kutzar, except in very limited context. After Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is a place in which God's direct involvement in the world is most clearly seen. What does the Torah tell us? The Torah tells us, in describing Eretz Yisrael, Parshat Ekev, still here. Eretz Asher Hashem Elokecha Doresh Ota Tamid Einei Hashem Elokecha Ba Mereshit Hashanah B'Yad Acharit Hashanah. Eretz Yisrael has a unique relationship with Hashem. The context here, and I should start if you took him earlier. This is Varim Perak Yudalek Pasuk Yud. Ki Ha'aretz, Moshe Rabbeinu is telling the people the difference between Eretz Mitzrayim, where they came from, and Eretz Yisrael, which they're going to. And he tells them, Ki Ha'aretz, Asher Atav Hashem Al Mishta, Lo Ki Eretz Mitzrayim, Mi Asher Yisat Misham, Asher Tizra, Zarecha, Vishkita, Baradlecha, Ki Gam Hayarak. Eretz Mitzrayim is a very, very fertile land. It's very easy to irrigate in Mitzrayim. There's the river, this great Nile River that overflows every spring. All of Egyptian society in ancient times was built on the banks of the Nile. They had these irrigation channels that just almost automatically, all you have to do is kick open a floodgate and boom, all the water runs into the field and there's never a drought. There's never a famine in Mitzrayim. That's why in Sefer Bereishit, whenever there's a famine, they go to Mitzrayim, there's always food. So Moshe Rabbeinu tells them, don't expect things to be like that here. Eretz Yisrael is mountainous. It's a land of hills and valleys. You need rain. If it rains, there's water and there's food. If it doesn't rain, there's no water, there's no food. And that, Moshe Rabbeinu tells him, is not a negative thing. It's a positive thing. Because in Eretz Yisrael, you recognize you're directly dependent on Hashem. Eretz Yisrael, Hashem Elokecha doresh ota. Tamid einei Hashem Elokecha ba mereishit. Hashana, the other Harishana. And therefore, Dafkin Eretz Yisrael, which is under the direct Hashkachat Hashem, Dafka here, Shemitah, takes the messages of the other seven, the messages of Shabbat, and the message of Rosh Hashanah, and makes it very, very clear that there's a master of the world who controls the destiny of the world. V'chitomar, ma'nochal v'shana shvi'it. If you're worried, what are we going to eat? Torah says, it's not up to you what you're going to eat. Kadosh Baruch Hu provides. If he tells you not to work, you don't work. Even if you do work, it only helps because he allows it to help. And therefore, you recognize that you don't own anything, and you don't control anything, and therefore there's no reason to be a miser. You have to allow others to come in, and therefore you have to treat the poor with respect, because after all, you're no different than they are. And if you have and they don't have, that's only by the good graces of God. And when you give to them, in Shemitah something becomes clear. I remember when I was in YU, Dr. Lamb, at the time of the president of YU, used to like to say, I heard this from him a few times, he used to comment that there's a big difference between the English word charity and the Hebrew word tzedakah. And that the difference in etymology of the two terms signifies a whole different hashkafat olam in terms of what is going on exactly when a wealthy benefactor provides for a poor recipient. Charity, he claims, comes from some Greek shoresh, I think it's charitos or something, which means love. And therefore charity is an act of kindness. I'm doing it out of the goodness of my heart. But of course, tzedakah comes from tzedek, comes from justice. The ultimate idea of tzedakah is not that I'm doing something nice, or I'm giving of myself to someone else. No, it's the tzedek. If I have and he doesn't, it's because God gave it to me for the purpose of giving it to him. He deserves it as much as I. And Shemitah brings this idea out on a higher level than anything else. Because everything's half here, and because everyone sees it. And not only that. But now let's return to the something that we skipped about yoga. Once every 50 years, this is taken to an even higher level. In Shemitah, the land is Hefkin. And the poor people come in the same as I do. But at least at the end of the year when it's finally over, at least then I get my field back. But every 50 years, I treat it again from the beginning, the Tafat to Prophetay, the Tafat to Lasa, Sheva Shabtot Shanim, Sheva Shanim, Sheva Shanim, Ayu Lecha Yimei Sheva Shabtot Shanim, Heisha Ve'abayim Shana, Ve'avata Shofar Tshua B'Kodesh HaShvi'i Be'Astor Nakodesh, Ve'yom HaKippurim Ta'abiru Shofar, בכל עצמכם, וקידשתם את שנת החמישים שנה, וקירתם זרוע בארץ לכל יושביה. יובל היא תהיה לכם, ושבתם איש על אחוזתו, ואיש על משפחתו תשוב. So, what happens in the 50th year? קראתם זרוע בארץ לכל יושביה, proclaim liberty throughout the land. It's on a bell in Philadelphia. That's where it comes from. What does that mean in practice? V'shavten ish al achuzato, v'ish al mishpachto tashuv. Everyone returns to their inheritance. Yovel hi שנת החמישים שנה תהיה לכם, לא תזרעו ולא תקצו את פיכה, לא תקצו את נביאה. In Yoda, you saw that in the Rambam. All the laws of Shemitah, Kshaka, apply in Yoda as well. In Yoda, you have to 2 years in a row not plant. There's 7 years, 7 Shemitahs. The 49th year is the Shnat Shemitah, so you don't plant. And the 50th year is Yoda, again you don't plant. That time you have to go 2 years without planting. And 2 entire seasons, and that was almost over 3 years until you can get the fruits of the next harvest. It doesn't say that, but apparently that's the case. It would have to be, right? It doesn't say that, it's true. But presumably it's implied. I agree with you, it doesn't say that. And the Shnat HaYovel Hazot, Tashuvu Isha L'Achuzato, V'chitim Kuru Mimkan L'Amitecha, U'kano Miyan L'Amitecha, Al Tolu Isha T'Achiv. The Mispar Shanim L'Chai Yodot, Tekne Meit HaMitecha, the Mispar Shanim L'Chuzat Yitzara. The Torah goes on to explain that when you buy or sell a Tzbeh Achuzat, every Jewish family is supposed to have an inheritance in Eretz Israel, except for Shevet Levi. Everybody has an inheritance, a certain plot of land that stays in the family, passed from generation to generation. And if you sell your land, you don't really sell it. You can only lease it, essentially. Every 50 years, the land goes back to its original owner. That's what Yovel is. And the economic and social implications of this are tremendous. And take the whole idea of Shemitah even to an even further level. You know, the great economic debate of the 20th century was between two systems, capitalism and communism. Okay? Most of us, I guess all of us, come from Western capitalist countries, right? The American dream, the idea of free enterprise. I grew up in America, and that was seen as the great, you know, the greatest thing in the world. Everybody can go out and work, and you know, your opportunities are limitless, and everybody can go out and be an entrepreneur and become wealthy. Marx, you might know, had a lot of criticism for this whole system. He said that money is the root of all evil, and that the wealthy people oppress the poor people, and you wind up with a wealthy aristocracy that it continues to oppress the poor. And he came up with communism as the great solution, right? There can be no classes in society, nobody owns anything in communism, everything belongs to the state. From each according to his ability, to each according to his need, everybody works, the government collects all the money and distributes it according to, right, and nobody gets richer than anybody else, and everybody's equal, and it's a worker's paradise, and that was the idea of communism. Okay, we know that communism failed, right? Capitalism won, because communism doesn't work. It breeds corruption, it breeds inefficiency, nobody, why should anybody work if they're not going to make any more money whether they do or don't? Communism failed. But Marx wasn't completely wrong. His criticisms of capitalist society were correct. The Torah has the answer. The Torah created this concept of yoga. 50 years is once in a person's lifetime, typically, maybe twice. If it was very long, depending where in the cycle you're born. A generation and a half, that's it. That's enough time to be in good incentive to work. And you can become wealthy, and you can amass property, but you can never have a situation where there's a permanent class of landowners that owns all the land, like happened in Europe in the Middle Ages, right? And where there's a class of poor peasants or serfs that are completely dependent. A person may become totally destitute and have to sell off his property. He might even become an heir. He might have to sell himself into slavery. At the end of the 6 years, he might get so desperate that he has to have his ear pierced and remain in slavery permanently. But every 50 years, there's a great equalizer, and everybody gets to start over. And he knows that if he sells the land that he inherited from his father, one day it's going to return to him, and if he doesn't live to see that day, at least it will return to his son. And his son will have a chance to start again. And every 50 years, the whole cycle regenerates itself. And if Yovel were to be implemented properly, it would create, in a sense, an ideal economic situation. But it's not just economic building. It's part and parcel of this whole system. Kili ha'aretz. The kidash to Mishnat ha'chamishim shana. And that's why Naomi, even though it doesn't say, that's why it's clear to me that the Torah's promise was for Yovel as well. Yovel is the culmination of all the Shemitah. And here we show our trust in Hashem even on a higher level.
doing that.
Right, that's what I think. Right. Yes, sir. And precisely because of this, Shemitah and Yovel are very closely connected to Geulah. And the Pesukim here also discusses Geulah Ta'arim. That if a person sells his land, he can buy it back afterwards. We know about that from the story of Ruth, right? Elimelech's fields were sold, and there's this concept of Geulah, right? It wasn't just marrying Ruth, they also had to buy back the fields. Boaz would redeem the land. Geulah Tidnu La'arim. End of the parsha. Redemption is connected to Shemitah and to Yovel. By observing Shemitah and Yovel, we demonstrate that we are worthy of Geulah. We demonstrate that we understand our place in this world. We understand who HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. We understand who we are as individuals and as a nation. And we strive to build a society based on those principles, a society based on tzedek, a society where the poor people are not only taken care of by charity, but are acknowledged as equal members of society and are protected by right. And who periodically are given new chances. And by the way, Shemitah Kesafim falls into this also. At the end of the Shemitah year, if somebody owes somebody else money, the debts are erased. Somebody got into trouble, somebody got into a lot of debt. New start. Start fresh. And that flows from the recognition. And by the way, there also the Torah says. There also the Torah says. In Dvarim, the Pesukim that you read. Also there, the Torah warns us to have Bikachon Bashem. Right? What's the law? At the end of the Shemitah year, it happens at the very end of Shemitah. Rosh Hashanah of the following year. At the end of the last day of Elul of the Shemitah year, when the sun goes down, anybody who owes money to anyone else, the debt is erased and he doesn't have to pay that. The Torah tells us in Dvarim Perek Tedvav, Pasuk Tet, Yishamer Lecha, Pen Yihyeh Davarim Bevarcha Bliya'al Emar, Karvash Shnat Hashem, Shnat Hashemitah, Let's say someone comes over to me today and asks me if he can borrow some money. Someone comes over to me, right? We're already fantasizing that I'm wealthy, right? So let's continue the fantasy. I have all this money, and somebody knocks on my door and says, "Listen, a neighbor from down the street, listen, I'm having some trouble. You know, it's not the first of the month, it's the second of the month. But let's say it's the end of the month, and the bank is calling, and I, you know, the mortgage is going to come through. Can I borrow some money?" No problem. I say, yeah, okay, I'll pay you back in a month, in 2 months, in 3 months, I have the money, and I trust you, or if I don't trust you, we'll fill out a document, we'll have witnesses, and fine, I'll help you out. We'll pay you back and get the money. Comes over to me today, I'm thinking, well, Shemitah Kesafim is still another 14 months away, and that's so bad. Let's say he comes over to me a year from now, or a year and a month from now. Comes over to me, Chaf Elul, at the end of the Shemitah year. 10 days from now is Rosh Hashanah. The guy says, "Listen, can I borrow, you know, $10,000? I really need some help." I'm going to say, "What, you idiot? You lend him this money and no, right?" So he says, "Don't you dare." V'chi. We're talking about a person who genuinely needs it, not a person who's trying to take advantage. A person who's really in trouble and needs help. Yishamer lecha pen yedavayim levavcha bli ya'al. That word in the Torah refers to, like, you know, completely. I don't know how you translate Bliya'al. A completely barbaric idea comes into your head. Le'mor, Karvah Shnat Hashem, Shnat Hashemitah. I'm not lending you money. I'll say to him, Kafel, we'll come back in 2 weeks, I'll lend you money. Right? He needs the money now. Don't do this. V'kara Alecha El Hashem, Haya V'chachet, Matom Titein Lo, V'lo Yirah Le'bavcha B'tiz Chalot, give him, don't even give any of that. You have to pretend like Kiru Shemitah's not happening. You will lend money the same way you will always. Don't even think about the fact that in 10 days, in fact, the debt's going to be erased. Keep it klal hadavar hazeh yivarech Hashem lokecha b'chol ma'asecha u'b'chol mishpat yivarechecha. You think that if you lend the money, it's going to make you lose money? You got it backwards. Because you give him the money, knowing that it's going to be lost. Because you acknowledge that it's not yours. That if a Kodesh Baruch Hu says this debt is erased, the debt is erased. Because you show that, that's why you deserve the money in the first place. And you'll get it back. Lehefek, if you refuse to give the money, then you're going to lose the money. A person who internalizes all this and realizes all this, his whole relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu is changed. And a society, remember, Shemitah is a national thing. That's what Rav Kook pointed out. A society that recognizes that. An entire country that stops, that opens up its gates, that stops plowing the field, and it once every 50 years erases all the land transactions and resets everything and sets all the slaves free. A society like that is a society that's based on Kedusha. And perhaps for that reason, we'll get into this, we'll see it more, the fruit of Shemitah have Kedusha. Perot Shemitah are holy. You pick an apple off the tree a year from now, it's going to be a holy apple. And there are all sorts of things you're going to have to do with it. And that's what we're going to talk about now when we get to the practicality. Because it's reflective of this unique relationship between Am Yisrael and Hashem and the unique society that Am Yisrael becomes as a result of that. And perhaps for that reason, Shemitah is the key to Geulah. And conversely, Chalila, the abandonment of Shemitah, is the key to Korban. The Torah makes clear in the Tokacha in Parshat Bechukotai, if you read carefully at the end there, that the abandonment of Shemitah is the reason for the Korban. And it's also made clear even very quickly in Sefer Divrei HaYamim, and all the way at the end, like the last page of the Tanakh. In Divrei HaYamim Bet. Mamash, the last page. Divrei HaYamim Bet, Perek Lamed Vav. The Torah is describing the Korban HaBayit. The Tanakh is describing the Korban HaBayit. And it says very clearly, Vayal Aleihem, Melech Kasdim, Vayarol Bachurein Bacherev, Vekulei, Vayishchefu et Beit Elokim, Vayinatsu et Chomat Yerushalayim, Vekol Aminotech, Tatu Vayish, Vekol Kremach Mader Lashchit, Vayagel Hasheirit Menacheret El Bavel, the people were carried off into Bavel, into exile. Vayu lo lefanav lavadim ad melokh lachut paras, limalo tivar Hashem b'fir miyahu, ad vatstah ha'aretz et shal tenteha, kol yimei hashana shamata, limalo 70 shana. The 70 shana of the galut for Churban Bayit Rishon, the Navi tells us, or the Tanakh tells us explicitly, we're in payment for 70 Shemitot that were ignored, were violated by Am Yisrael. Az tirtzeh ha'aretz v'shav tovteha. That's the quote from Sefer Vayikra. You didn't let the land rest, so the land is going to rest for 70 years. The land is going to be desolate, and the land is going to get its Shemitah. The only question is if you give it willingly, or if it has to be taken from you by force. So the abandonment of Shemitah leads to Churban Chalila, the observance of Shemitah leads to Gula. The full idea of Shemitah may be something that Am Yisrael never ever achieved. My Rebbe Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, a Rosh Yeshiva, he wrote a very beautiful article after his first Shemitah here in Eretz Yisrael 35 years ago, which I'll show you for Zvat Hashem at the end. And I was recently speaking to him, and he made the same comment that he wrote in that article 35 years ago. There are two times, only two times, that the Torah explicitly warns us to keep the mitzvah and to trust in Hashem. We just read them both, Shemitah Karka and Shemitah Kesafim. We failed both times. When it came to Shemitah Kesafim, right, you may have learned about this. I don't know if we'll have a chance to discuss it in detail, but Hillel already in the time of the Mishnah saw that people were violating the Torah's laws. The Torah told you, lend money to poor people, don't even think about the fact that Shemitah is coming, and the fact of the matter is people weren't doing that. And the Shemitah, which is supposed to help poor people, right, someone who gets into debt is supposed to be able to get a release in Shemitah, instead the opposite was happening, and people simply stopped lending money, and so he invented the Pruzbul, which is a halakhic way of basically avoiding Shemitah Kesafim. It allows you to lend money and collect it afterwards. It's a loophole. It basically allows you not to keep Shemitah Kesafim. When it comes to Shemitah Karka, we read the pasuk in Divrei HaYamim that Am Yisrael simply didn't keep the laws, and because of that it brought the Churban. And even today, we keep the laws on a technical level, but as we'll see, this is really the substance of that beautiful article that I'm going to give you to read. And we'll talk about the details. Hetem Mechira, yes, Hetem Mechira, no Hetem Mechira. We'll talk about things called Otsar Dezim, Matan Mitzak, and the various different halachic devices that are in use today to observe Shemitah. But whatever we do today, and I'm not degrading it in any way, the Shemitah that we have now is still a far cry from this vision that the Torah gave us. V'achlu ev yonei amecha, v'yitram tochlu chayat ha-sadeh, v'shatata ha-aretz shabbat l'ashem. And therefore, l'fachot, the first thing to do is to learn about Shemitah. And this is why Shemitah is relevant on a certain level as much in Chutz La'aretz as it is here. Even if, just one second, even if the halachic principles and the day-to-day observance of these laws hit you in the face more in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore Baruch Hashem, someone who's able to be in Eretz Yisrael for Shemitah is going to experience it on a much more intense level, the idea behind Shemitah and the messages of Shemitah are relevant wherever we are. And the more we learn about Shemitah, even if we're afar and kind of following it from a distance, I think Shemitah is still very relevant. Yes?
You're talking about
there's no chance that before everything gets in the low yet, right? Right.
What gives us the right to
do a new chance without the tshuva? Well, it's interesting what you're saying. Tshuva is something else, and there is a connection, right? It's interesting that Yovel, Dafka, takes place, the release of the land and the slaves takes place on Yom Kippurim of all days, right? So it's clearly, clearly connected. But the new chance here is an economic new chance. It's not necessarily the evil person who's in trouble. It's the poor person. The one who, you have rich people and you have poor people, and the poor people get, you know, their debts are released and the slaves are released and then the land is returned to its former owners and everyone gets a new chance economically. But I think there's a metaphor there for tshuva. And maybe that's why, I'm guessing, maybe that's why Yom Kippurim is the day. When that shofar blows in Yom Kippurim, that's the day that all this takes place. Perhaps there's a metaphor there. That the same way that in Yovel, a person who's built up economic debts gets a new chance, those who built up spiritual debts on Yom Kippurim get a new chance as well. Right? In the same way you're perhaps. Everybody should do tshuva.
But no, but yeah,
well, perhaps the rich person is the one who Yovel is certainly a test for the rich people more than for the poor person, right? The rich one stands to the poor person only benefits from Yovel. Right? So I guess perhaps on that level that's true. But I'm saying something else. I'm saying the image of Yovel. Right? That debts are released and you get a new chance and you can start fresh. Maybe that's why the shofar blows on Yom Kippurim. Every Yom Kippur, we all have a spiritual bank account, right? And many of us run up heavy overdrafts in that bank account, right? And Yom Kippurim does the same thing for us on that level that Yovel does on the economic level. That's a very interesting. Right.
But isn't it so that essentially you can't have a Yom Kippur without
Yovel?
Because
I don't know. I mean, Yosef tells us that he was sold into slavery not because of his own failures, but in order to provide for later on, right, to provide for Am Yisrael. But, a person sold into slavery, it's interesting. There are two ways a person can become we're talking about a Jewish slave, an Eved Ivri. It could be that he stole money and can't pay it back, or it could be that he simply ran up debts and can't pay them, so he sells himself. So it could be he committed a crime, but he doesn't have to have committed a crime. Either way, he got into a desperate situation, though. Doesn't have to be, no. Then why does God put people in that situation? No, I don't know. Okay. I wanted to get into some of the technicalities of Shemitah, which we didn't get into yet, and particularly the Perek of Rambam that you read, in terms of how we counted and how we figured out that this is a Shemitah year and all that. I guess we'll pick up from that on Wednesday. I'll give you also on Wednesday, Be'ezrat Hashem, to start learning the basic halachic principles of Shemitah, and after that we'll get into more of the details. Thank you.